That was the toccata, followed by the gigue, the beginning and the end of the Partita No. 6 by Bach, BWV 830. And it was played by Murray Pariah, the pianist who will take centre stage later this week in a performance at the BBC Proms by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra. They'll be conducted by Bernard Haitink, and he'll be playing Beethoven's 4th piano concerto. And you can hear that prom, the first of two given by the Vienna Philharmonic Orchestra this week, live here on BBC Radio 3, beginning at 7 o'clock this Thursday evening. Well, the time now is just a little after a quarter past 10, and a little later than usual, it's time for World Roots on Radio 3. This week, Lucy Duran is in Nepal.
This is the central square of Bhaktapur. It's evening. There are a couple of very tall and beautiful temples and three groups of musicians playing in the shelters of the temples. I've been brought here by two guides. Shamshir Pradhan is the man that you have to know if you want to work in Bhaktapur. He's a research assistant, he's a lawyer, and he knows absolutely everyone. And my other guide here is Professor Richard Widdis, who's a specialist in the music of this country, of Nepal, and in particular of Bhaktapur. Shamshir, please tell me about this fantastic five-story temple that's behind you with five stories of pagodas.
This is the temple built late 17th century, and dedicated to Mahalakshmi, which is the goddess related to Tantrism. And this is the place, is the central of the town. From here, the town divided into two, upper town and lower town.
Richard, the people who live in this particular town and in this region, who are they?
Most of them belong to the ethnic group known as the Newars, who are claimed to be the original inhabitants of the Kathmandu Valley, and who, over a period of 2,000 years, developed this wonderful urban civilization with magnificent architecture, and all the arts were cultivated, painting and sculpture and wood carving music, of course.
Tell me about the music that we're hearing now, that's the music that's coming from these temples.
This is music that's known as Dafa, which is singing hymns to the various gods and goddesses that are worshipped here in Bhaktapur. Especially here, because we're standing at the foot of the temple of Bhairav, who is the fierce incarnation of Shiva and is the patron deity of Bhaktapur. So these three groups were especially dedicated to singing his praises. But actually all the groups sing songs to all the gods and goddesses.
Well, Richard, there are these three groups playing right now, and yet you're making me get up at the crack of dawn to go and hear another group in another part of town. Now, why is that?
Well, we're going to hear the Dafa group for the Chandeshwari temple, which is a much smaller temple in one of the local neighbourhoods of the town. But the Dafa group for that temple has a particularly vigorous way of singing, and they're particularly well organized. They have a musical society which organizes the singing. They meticulously take the record of attendance of the singers, and if the singers don't attend, they have to pay a fine. So the whole thing is very enthusiastic, and this comes through in the music, I think, that you can hear the enthusiasm and the musical coordination.
And the dedication?
Absolutely.
So what I'm to expect tomorrow morning at the crack of dawn to wake me up is cymbals,
drums,
lots of singing.
Loud singing. They even have a trumpet player who joins in with the fast sections of each song. It makes quite a noise.
And all of that looking at the temple of the deity that they worship?
Yes, they sit on a platform that looks directly across to the temple itself, and there will be people coming and going to the temple to worship.
Even at 5:30 in the morning?
Even at 5:30 in the morning.
Rain or shine?
Rain or shine.
It's very early in the morning, and this group of about 25 men have been singing already for about 2 hours in front of a temple for one of the Hindu goddesses. And as you can hear, it's raining extremely heavily. It's been raining all night. We're in the monsoon season. And I have to say that I got very little sleep because the temple bells here in Bhaktapur were just ringing all night. Every time someone goes by a temple, they ring that bell. So it must be a very religious town, Bhaktapur, Richard.
It is. The name Bhaktapur itself means the city of devotees. Religion is just part of the whole way of life here.
The whole time we've been here listening to these musicians singing, there have been people coming up to the temple, women mainly, with offerings, flower petals. Men have been praying, touching their heads. It's just been constant the whole time.
Yes, that's how you should start the day, paying your respects to the local deity. Most of the people that we've seen will be local people from this particular neighbourhood, as are all the members of the singing group.
It's getting very busy now. There's traffic going down this very narrow street.
Yes.
Right opposite us, across the street, is the temple. But this shelter where we're standing here, explain the significance of this place where the musicians sit in a rectangle.
There are shelters like this all over Bhaktapur, and they're used for all sorts of purposes, and singing is one of them, especially where the shelter, as here, is facing a temple. Then that is the prime purpose of it, is for singers. But during the day, it could be used for any other purpose, for people to meet, to talk. Sometimes they can be used as a schoolroom, and so on. So it's not dedicated solely to music.
Shamshed, all of these gentlemen here, they're all farmers?
Most of them are all farmers, and still they are doing farming.
Some of them look very, very old. How old is the oldest member of this group?
95 years old, and he is still singing, and the rest of the other members has to follow him.
Is it like a club then, this group of men?
Some sort
here?
Of music club, and it's a social structure. Not only the musical club, but when they have some social problems, they can work together, they can solve together. And among them, whenever they have some work to do, then they can share work.
They help each other
with
farming.
Yeah, with farming.
And what kinds of farming activity happens now in this season, in the monsoon?
Rice transplantation, afterwards weeding.
Weeding.
Weeding and harvest.
So they all go out and they pull out all the weeds from the rice together? Or
the weeding means they clear up unnecessary grasses in the paddy field.
Today is a special day. It's full moon. On this particular full moon day, the farmers worship the frogs that live in the fields, who are the guardians of the fields, and they take food for the frogs and leave it for them in the fields.
Lucky frogs.
When the summer is close, so they calculate their farming routine according to the frog's sound. And from today, after feeding the frog, it means the summer temperature is coming down and the winter is coming close then.
To summarize, what we're hearing is a style of singing called Dafa.
Yeah.
And it's for to celebrate the seasonal moment, which is the moment of weeding, the moment of feeding frogs, the transition from summer to winter, and the full moon.
Right, yes.
So, very good timing on our part to be here in Bhaktapur at this very moment.
It's our pleasure.
Just the right moment.
It's our pleasure.
That was the special style of singing that comes from this town, the royal town of Bhaktapur, to the east of Kathmandu. And that style of singing was called Dafa. And it seems to me that a lot of the music that happens in this town is in some way connected with temples and temple rituals. And we've come now to hear some drumming. Tell me about it, Richard.
Yes, this is a group called the Master Drummers of Nepal. They are local musicians who've formed themselves into a group who take their music all around the world. As far as I know, it's the only such group that actually play Newar music outside Nepal.
So all this music that we're hearing is really localized. It's just this place.
Yes, completely.
Normally you would hear it.
Yes. The music is based very much in small neighbourhoods, very often around a temple. And so the kind of singing that we heard was performed by singers from that neighbourhood around that temple.
For that specific goddess?
Yes, indeed.
One of the things that I wanted to understand was what was it exactly that the women were offering to the deities? Because they looked like round discs of some kind on a plate. What was that? Shamsher.
There's a piece of radish, and it is a hook with the bamboo stick, and it is a symbol of mirror to honor the frog, that they can see themselves, how beautiful they are, how they are happy. So there's a symbol of mirror.
So the frog is supposed to look in a round piece of radish and see himself.
See himself, yeah.
And think how beautiful I look.
How beautiful they look, yeah.
In a radish mirror.
That this is the season of the frog's marriage as well.
Oh, they get married.
Yeah, they're married, so they have to be beautiful.
That's wonderful. Yes. And also I've been looking at the food as we've been walking along to where we are now. I've seen lots of different kinds of lentils and peas.
Yes.
What's that, Richard?
Yes. At this season, indeed on this very day, they cook a special kind of soup, which is made of 9 different kinds of beans and other pulses. So that is the special food.
Why
for
9?
This well, 9 is a kind of sacred number, an auspicious number. So all good things come in 9. Like goddesses, for example, there are 9 special goddesses. And the music we're about to hear is from a repertoire called the 9 drums music, Norbaja, where you play a sequence of solos on 9 different kinds of drum.
Richard, I'm glad to see that they're tuning up, these master drummers.
Oh, yes, yes.
Because, curiously enough, the drummers of the Dafa musicians were certainly not in tune.
There's no concept that the drums have to be tuned to a specific pitch. But what happens is that once a year, the drum maker goes round all the groups and tunes their instruments for them and repairs them if necessary. Once a year, they get tuned. We're coming up to the retuning because it happens around about harvest time, because then the drum maker gets paid in the rice, the new rice, the harvested rice.
So once again, everything's connected with the agricultural year cycle.
Almost
and the seasons.
Yes. Yes.
It's really organic music, isn't
exactly.
it?
Exactly, yes.
Well, let's hear the master drummers of Nepal.
Thank you.
pretty spectacular and loud.
Very loud.
Everything seems very loud in this country.
As loud as possible.
That's the exciting and exhilarating sound of the master drummers of Nepal, recorded here in Bhaktapur, especially for World Roots, in this pavilion. And we're actually in the music department. This is part of the music department of Kathmandu University. A gorgeous location set in a tropical garden with the mountains around us. One of the master drummers is Raju, who's with me. So, Raju, tell me how you came to put together this group of master drummers.
Most of the group members as a friend also, and also they are working as in the department as a teaching. They also teach traditional drums and classical drum, tabla also they teach. We know each other for a long time, so as we just set a group as a playing these traditional drums.
And is there any other group like this in Nepal?
Traditionally there are several groups, but some old people are died and new people are not interested in playing this old instruments. Some groups are still there, but they don't play regularly.
Richard, tell me more about this music.
The dhime music that we've just heard is very
the
often...
Dhime is the name of the big oil drum, is that
drum,
it?
The drum, yes. This is processional music, which will be played walking down the street or walking around a temple, which might be part of a religious ritual, part of a festival.
And the oil drum doesn't seem like a very old drum.
Well, originally, of course, they were made of wood and rather smaller because they were made of a section of tree trunk hollowed out. But when oil drums became available, then, of course, they were used because they're so much bigger and enable the players to get such a big and deep sound.
There are lots of other drums in this group as well, different kinds of drum, but also different kinds of shawm. Tell me about those.
Well, the shawms are used for some of the pieces in the nine drums repertoire. They play a melody, a repeated melody, but actually they are accompanying the drum. The drum is the solo instrument. The shawms are there to accompany.
And this little drum?
The naking is a small drum, traditionally played by the butcher caste. In the past, they had the duty to play in processions, at the head of the procession. For example, if the king were processing through the town. Nowadays, if a statue of the Buddha, for example, is being taken through the town, then the naking will be played at the head of the procession.
I thought all this music was associated with Hinduism.
Buddhism is also a very important religion in Bhaktapur. There are Hindu and Buddhist festivals, and there are Hindu and Buddhist gods and goddesses.
Side by side?
Side by side. And many of the same musicians play in honour of both the Hindu and Buddhist deities.
Richard, today is a very special day in Bhaktapur, and there's a lot happening. We've come to a very narrow street with tall brick houses and lots of people waiting to begin the procession for this day, which is a day of the sacred cow. So tell me about it. What's this day?
Well, on this day, any family in Bhaktapur who has lost a relative during the last 12 months will celebrate that person's life.
and they'll do so by carrying this tall structure, a bit like a church steeple, but made of bamboo and wrapped with cloth. And that represents both the person who has died, the person's photograph will be suspended on it, and also at the top there will be a pair of cow's horns in a straw model of cow's horns, because this represents the cow, the sacred cow, that can transport the soul of the departed to heaven on this one day of the year.
There's a lot going on musically as well. I've seen lots of different kinds of bands, but right now we're with a band of cymbals and a drum that has a large pair of goat horns. Oh, here's one of these representations of the dead just going right by us. They're carrying it on freshly cut green bamboo stalks. And right behind them, a bunch of kids carrying sticks. Tell me about this.
They're going to do a stick dance at the head of the procession. So they will go first, and then the drums and cymbals will follow them. And there's a special chant that they shout. They're practicing that at the moment. And then they'll set off in two lines. The dance involves clashing the sticks together.
At a particular moment in the rhythm.
In the rhythm of the dance, yes.
And it's always children who do this.
They're very often children, yes.
And we've got another group coming up now. They're playing flutes. It's a group of women flute players with a harmonium. And now, behind them, following them, are the two most beautifully dressed, very small girls with fabulous makeup. What do they represent?
They represent gods and goddesses. We have Shiva, I think, and Parvati, one of the principal male deities of Hinduism, and his consort.
So, of the outburst of cymbals, what is that?
That was the invocation to the gods, which you always have to play before any kind of musical performance or dance performance. It must always begin and end with this invocation to the gods.
There's an especially fine handcart going by now with an image of a cow, and Shamshir tells me that it's the lawyer who died. How do you know that?
He used to be a member of my bar association, and he is one of the most senior lawyers in this city.
So he's died recently?
And he died 1 month ago.
Shamshir, how do you feel when you see this image of the cow?
I feel very sad, but on the other hand, it convinced me that the natural rule of dead and bird.
So this festival, the Festival of the Sacred Cow, is about the cycle of the seasons during the year, and it's also about the cycle of birth and death. Richard, we've been standing in this particular spot in front of this temple now for about a quarter of an hour, and we've seen fantastic and very exciting stick dancing. We've seen the masked dancers. We've seen loads of representations of the sacred cow going by. There must be something special about this corner.
Well, it's part of the route that everybody follows. Everybody goes around the same route, which goes in a clockwise direction all round the town.
Why clockwise?
Because that is how you worship a sacred object. You go round it clockwise, keeping it on your right-hand side, which is the auspicious side. So today, the sacred object is Bhaktapur.
And what is this temple here?
This magnificent temple with brick construction and wonderful wood-carved doors and windows and magnificent heavy overhanging eaves. This is the temple of the Navadurga, the nine goddesses who protect Bhaktapur, and they are embodied in male dancers who wear very heavy pottery masks. And when they put on their masks, it is believed that they then actually become the goddesses, and people will actually come up and touch the masks in order to receive a blessing from the goddess.
There's a wonderful sense of the sacred and the secular together here?
It's very difficult to distinguish the two. In Newar culture, the sacred and secular, they're integrated and you can't really separate one from the other.
It's quite difficult to get a really good recording of some of these groups of musicians that are going by us. But I know that you've arranged for us to record a group of farmers playing flutes. Can you tell me about them?
Flute bands are another type of music that's very popular among Newar people, especially the farmer castes. The farmers keep so many of these traditions alive that otherwise have tended to disappear in Bhaktapur culture.
And who's the group that we're going to be hearing?
We're going to be hearing the Dumlatsa group, which is the name of the area that they come from.
A noisy tractor going by us, appropriately.
Yeah, yeah. The name of the group is unbelievable. The name of the group means Inside the Open Toilet.
Let's go and record Inside the Open Toilet group. That's a group of 20 farmers musicians playing the flute, 16 flutes, drums and cymbals, recorded here in Bhaktapur in the Kathmandu Valley in Nepal, especially for World Roots. I can't get over the fact that the name of the group is Inside the Open Toilet. So, Richard, you've got to explain to me why they're called that.
Yeah. Well, names of places and people are often rather jokey here and very often uncomplimentary.
Well, that's certainly what it is.
But I understand that in this particular neighbourhood there was an open latrine for everybody to use, so the name has stuck.
So it's a reference to their neighbourhood.
Yes, yes.
Now, we keep coming across these very, very specific castes. So there's a farmer's caste, there's a caste for oil pressers. It seems that every single skill and profession has its own caste. Is that the case?
Yes, that's traditionally how Hindu society is structured, with priests at the top and kings somewhere just a little lower than that, and then farmers somewhere in the middle, and below them other craftspeople and oil pressers, then right at the bottom usually musicians and sweepers and people like that.
It seems to be a tradition that's really adhered to.
Yes, here in Bhaktapur especially, the caste system is still very much alive, even though, of course, with modern life and so on, there are many changes and people no longer necessarily follow the profession into which they were born. But the caste system is still very much there, and I think it has two aspects. One is that it creates boundaries between higher and lower castes, but within the castes, or between equivalent ranked castes, it creates great synergy. There's a lot of mutual assistance and support to be had.
Solidarity.
Solidarity, exactly.
Nevertheless, if you're born a farmer, you remain a farmer all your life, whether you farm or not.
Traditionally, that was the idea, yes. But nowadays, farmers have been selling their land and have becoming rather rich as a result, and going into other businesses, setting up shops and going into business and so on. So there's now less land farmed because people are building on it due to the population pressures.
But the farmers are getting richer.
That's right.
They're still not moving up the caste system, though.
No, they will remain farmers by caste.
Well, it's pouring with rain again. So, I mean, we really are seriously in monsoon season. So much of the music seems rooted in season.
Yes, indeed. There are specific songs to be sung at different seasons. For example, the song Silu is sung at this season because it's about a pilgrimage which traditionally takes place at this monsoon season.
And what is the pilgrimage?
It's to a lake, a mountain lake called Gosainkund, which is sacred to the god Shiva. And different ethnic groups have the custom of going on pilgrimage to it at different times of the year. So for the Newars here in Bhaktapur, this is the proper season.
Hi. That was a really lovely duet, a seasonal song sung by Sanumaya Daubadel and Panchalal Manandar with some very fine drumming by Budalal Manandar, the brother of the male singer. And that was recorded specially for us here in Bhaktapur. I've seen a few things that I didn't expect to see. For example, I've seen some of the stick dancers were men dressed as women. What's that about?
One of the themes of Gai Jatra,
this festival,
is a kind of inversion of normality. And one way of expressing that is for men to dress up as women. And so you get one line of men dancing opposite another line of men dressed as women. As it were, husband and wife pairs. And the wives have little brass jars of spirit, alcohol, which they pretend to pour into the cups held by the men. So this kind of expresses in a sardonic way the supposed gender relations in the society.
How do you think this festival is doing, Richard, in terms of survival of the old tradition?
I've seen this festival several times over the last 15 years, and I'm very heartened to see there's absolutely no sign of this tradition dying out. Quite the reverse. I seem to see more enthusiasm and more variety each time I come.
Thank you so much for bringing me to this fantastic festival. Thanks to you, Richard, and to you, Shamsher, for sharing this wonderful occasion with me. But I think it's time now to go on to our final port of call here in Bhaktapur and listen to a very different kind of music, a music that's not attached to ritual, the ritual of the day, but something very different. What will it be?
It will be a group of musicians from the Gandharva caste, a group of hereditary musicians who live, for the most part, outside the Kathmandu Valley, and who travel to sing songs, and thereby in the former times they used to convey the news of the day in their songs and also information from the ruling authorities to their people. And their songs are very attractive melodically, and they're usually accompanied by the sarangi, the bowed instrument sarangi, and sometimes flute, sometimes the small drum called madal, which has become a kind of national emblem of Nepal.
Well, I'm not surprised that they're called musicians of the gods, because that was really celestial music. Four musicians, they are Bharat Nepali, who plays sarangi, which, as you can hear, is a kind of fiddle with four strings. Ruben Kumar Sresta, who plays flute,
the bansuri, the wooden flute, Bharat Budhatoki, who plays madal, which is a double-headed small drum, and then there's a second smaller madal played by Meghraj Lungeli. And that song was We Are Children of the Mountains. Yeah. And I'm with Ruben Kumar Sresta, the flute player. Tell me about this song, We Are Children of the Mountains.
Okay, we played the first song, We Are the Children of the Mountains. Basically, this song is from the children of the mountain, and they are expressing their feelings. In the mountains, their home and the schools, they are very far.
And their schools?
Yeah, very far. So they have to walk many hours to reach the school, and they are expressing the pain that they couldn't get the proper education because school is so far. They have to take care of their yak. Yak means the mountain cows. So they cannot get the education in the mountains.
So it's a tough life for the people in the mountains. Yeah. Tell me about the Gandharvas.
Gandharva. Gandharva are the ethnic group, especially musician, who travels from one place to another for their earning and for their life. Yeah. Many years back, there was no telephone, no such electronic medias. And Gandharva were the means of the communication. They used to tell the stories and the events, certain things in the beautiful songs so that the people can understand easily. Yeah, they're really brilliant people.
I understand that you have a beautiful song or a beautiful piece based on a folk song about the national bird of Nepal.
Yeah.
Tell me about that one.
Yeah, it's the Dafi, sorry. It's the bird, traveling bird, that doesn't stay in the same place. And the Gandharva, they are the musicians who travels in the different places. So it's similar to the life of the Lofa forest and the Gandharva, yeah, similar. So
you, the wandering bards, you're like the national bird of Nepal.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful image.
Okay.
So from the musicians of the gods, we're going to hear a song about the national bird of Nepal with its nine colors.
Yeah. Thank you.
The music and the sounds of the natural world from the Himalayas, recorded for World Roots on location in Nepal. Lucy Duran was joined by Shamsher Pradhan and Professor Richard Willis. And the producer of the programme was James Parkin.
The 2012 BBC Proms season goes out with a bang. On the two nights before the last night, a pair of BBC Proms concerts with the Vienna Philharmonic and Bernard Haitink. Haydn, Strauss, Bruckner, and Beethoven's fourth piano concerto, played by Murray Pariah. The Vienna Philharmonic at the BBC Proms. Thursday and Friday nights at 7 and 7.30 on BBC Radio 3.
This is BBC Radio 3. We're broadcasting between 90 and 93 FM on digital radio and in high-definition sound online. It's a 11:15, time for Jazz Lineup with Julian Joseph.
On today's show, highlights of a special concert set recorded at the highly regarded Scarborough Jazz Festival. Last year, the seaside town played host to the orchestra of emerging band leader and composer Tommy Evans. He's originally a drummer, but now his chosen instrument is the big band, and later on in the show, we'll be featuring his Green Seagull Suite. Staying with the drums, we start things off with Tom Bancroft and his collaboration with pianist Tom Corley and bass player Per Zanussi. He calls it Trio Red. First hello to Last Goodbye from Trio Red, Scottish-based drummer Tom Bancroft's new project with bassist Per Zanussi and London stalwart Tom Corley on the piano. The album is out now on the Interrupto music label, and it sees Bancroft bringing his open-minded unstuffiness to the trio format. And staying in the open-minded arena, tenor saxophonist Trish Clues follows up her debut album, where she continues the textural development of her compositional ear, adding improvising string quartet to the quartet of Chris Montague on guitar, Callum Gourlay on bass, and the ubiquitous James Madryn on drums. Clues is a saxophonist in the tradition of Andy Shepherd and teacher Ian Ballamy. On the composition Green Circle, her use of guitar reveals shades of Mark Turner's textural approach. This is Green Circle. Thank you. The tenor sax of Trish Clues from her new album on Basho called And in the Nighttime She Is There. Chris Montague is on guitar, Callum Gawley on the bass, and James Madron on the drums. On this recording, Clues continues to search and investigate compositionally and engages the talents of pianist-producer Gwilym Simcock and Thomas Gould's improvising string quartet. Her music definitely holds the attention and is looking for its own space. And In the Nighttime She Is There is out on Basho Records. Well, back to our old friends at Edition Records. They launched saxophonist Marius Nassette to the British public last year. And this year he teams up with tuba player, or tubist, as he's referred to, Daniel Herskedal. They met while studying at the Rhythmic Conservatoire in Copenhagen, and for this album they investigate folk and classical sounds of Scandinavia with some jazz inflection. The album is called Neck of the Woods, and here are two pieces that show off their collaboration. The first is the gentle title track, Neck of the Woods, followed by the meditative groove-based Dragon's Eye.
Thank you. Two of Scandinavia's finest, tubist Daniel Herskedal and saxophonist Marius Nasset, with Dragon's Eye. Before that, we heard the title track, Neck of the Woods. Their new album is out now on the Edition label and pairs two composing improvisers and added texture of the Svanholm singers. It makes for a spiritual and calming Scandinavian sound. This is Jazz Lineup with me, Julian Joseph, on BBC Radio 3, on FM, online and on digital radio. Time now for our concert set tonight, and it comes from band leader Tommy Evans, who directs his orchestra in a performance of his Green Seagull Suite. Evans draws inspiration for this composition from the life of his uncle, David Partridge, and has sculpted pieces reflecting Partridge's philosophies through the events of his life. The Marsden Jazz Festival originally commissioned the piece, and we'll hear highlights from part one of a composition conceived in two larger parts, each made up of five smaller movements. Tommy Evans has recently come onto the scene as a drummer and band leader, and is instinctive and insightful in his ability to utilize his compositional vocabulary and experience to keep his music engaging with his 12-piece orchestra. The nine instrumentalists are Matt Roberts and Simon Beddoe on trumpet and flugelhorn. Russell Henderson is on alto and tenor saxophones. Simon Kalis on flute, soprano and tenor saxophones. Rob Mitchell is on tenor and baritone saxophones. Nick Tyson is on guitar. Jameel Sheriff is on piano. Dave Kane is on bass and Chris Wright is on the drums. Added to that are three vocalists, and that's Carrie Nygaard-Blevick, Ruby Wood and Anna Stott. Recorded at the Scarborough Jazz Festival at the Spa on Sunday the 25th of September last year, here is the Tommy Evans Orchestra and highlights from part one of his Green Seagull Suite, and they start with Per Mare, Per Tarum, which translates to by sea, by land.